Hi everyone, and welcome to the first LTL show. I'm your host, Jack Moore. So I'm one of the directors of WeShape, which is a technology consultancy. What is the LTL show? So we're going to be speaking to some of the most interesting names in technology. So we're going to be speaking about tech, their experience, their background, and whatever comes to mind, really. So for the first episode, we're fortunate enough to have Steve Homan with us. Steve's the CTO of Metapack. He's headed up to the technology functions for Fitness First, the Daily Mail Group, and you used to work in management consultancy as well, right?
Unbelievably, yes, I did. Yes.
Steve, how's it going? Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure, Jack. It's going well. Metapack sits between roughly 500 retailers and about 500 carriers around the world. Providing delivery options. So when can I get this delivered? Then the label, which is provided by an intelligent allocation engine, which comes then onto the package and into your house, and then tracking to tell you where your package is. That's what I do. It's fun.
Nice, good stuff. And I thought, just to let everyone get to know you a bit better, I was thinking it might be a good idea to do a quick fire round of questions. And what I want you to do, Steve, is just give me the first thing that comes to your head. So no thinking. It might be a bit fast-paced, but it's all fun stuff. So, favourite tech company?
Oh, gosh, this is going to be tricky. I'm excited. Okay, let's do it.
All right, let's go. So favourite tech company?
Ocado or Apple. Apple, Ocado, one of those.
Favourite book?
The Private Life of Chairman Mao.
Nice. Favorite vendor?
PagerDuty. Amazing. Just why didn't more people not think it's the best tech company out there?
Favorite employer?
That's easy. Procter & Gamble. My first proper job, and just amazing. Taught me everything I still endlessly trot out.
I suppose it'll be the same for the... I was going to say favorite boss. I don't know if that's the same.
Favorite boss had to be Colin at Fitness First. He just trusted me, and we got on really well and did a lot together.
Name one thing on your bucket list, Steve.
This will mean nothing to anybody else apart from a very select group of people, but I want to catch a fish that is over 40 pounds called a carp that is very British and old. It makes no sense, but it's what I really want to do. And I'm rubbish at it.
If you weren't in technology, what would you be doing?
I think I would either do one of my two loves in life. I'd either be making techno or surfing, or doing both, ideally.
Nice. I suppose with your team, I mean, are you the guy that's always on call, or do they only call you when they really, really have to?
No, so I'm on call. I do major incident manager shifts. I think there is a little bit of a do we have to call Steve when I am doing it, but yeah, I believe you got to live and breathe it. So yeah, I'm on the phone at 3 a.m. if I need to be.
Nice. I suppose, are you the type of guy that prefers the approach of just give me a dashboard, or you prefer in detail?
I love the detail, Jack. I just love it. Getting really understanding what's wrong and why, rather than, you know, I don't want a traffic light. I have a massive hatred of traffic light type things. Really understanding. It just makes everything simpler and clearer and easier to explain.
In-house or offshore?
In-house always. Our team, our way.
Yeah. Tell me something interesting about yourself, Steve.
I have seen all three of the world's embalmed communist leaders.
Really?
Yes, I know. I was lucky enough to go traveling. Well, lucky enough, my wife said to me a few years ago, you're becoming boring and we need to do something. If we're going to see the world, we need to go now. So 6 weeks later, we packed up our Shoreditch flat and we're on the road to Delhi. And during those travels, that's one of the things that we did.
Yeah, I was going to say, was that on purpose or by accident?
No, definitely on purpose. It changed me as a person.
Really?
It really did. It made me learn a lot.
Well, listen, let's see. That's the end of the quick fire round, because obviously slow things down a bit more. And I obviously want to ask a bit more about your experience. So, I mean, first thing that comes to mind for me, I always want to know this from kind of senior executive, is if you could go back to and have a chat with your 21-year-old self and give that person a bit of valuable advice, I mean, what would be the type of thing you would say?
I was a nightmare when I was 21. I just beat everyone over the head with a logical hammer until they gave up. So I would go back and tell myself to listen more, have empathy, and let people tell you their fears rather than telling them yours.
I mean, I suppose what energizes you as well in the current role that you are at the moment, what energizes you and also what depletes you, Steve?
So what energizes me is the amazing people I work with. We call ourselves Metapackers, but it's a very rare company. It's everybody's together. We, you know, it's not perfect. Like all families, there's, you know, we're not singing and dancing all the time, but it's really, we're a really close company. We make decisions very well, very together, and we heavily empower people. And it's just, it makes your job easy.
Yeah. Well, they say
what depletes me is the opposite of when there's people in our ecosystem who just won't get it right and won't take the time to get it right. We're a hardcore engineering company. And when we see people who've built APIs that don't work properly or constantly go wrong, it really is quite frustrating because we can fix it and we tell them how to fix it, but it's just watching them refuse at times to engage in the right conversation.
I think that relates to the old saying is if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with people. So it's important having that team around you. In at Metapack, or I suppose even across your career, I mean, work-life balance is always an interesting topic, right? A lot of people are always talking about this. I mean, is this something you've struggled with within your role? Or
I did in the past, particularly when I worked in media. It was a culture of very long hours, and it was almost, you know, why are you going home at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock? And it was tough because I had a long commute, and I felt like I wasn't winning because I was so tired at the end, towards the end of the week. I was nowhere near as balanced and efficient as I could be. So for the last probably 3 years, on average, if I'm lucky, one day a week, I actually do my job from a lake. Nice. So I try and catch these big fish. They're hard to catch. I'm rubbish at it, so nothing happens. But it gives me time and space to not just be busy, a busy fool, to really get it right, think through what's happening, think through, are we doing the right things? And also, you know, there's a lot of phone calls and video conferences, because these days, you know, a laptop and a 4G phone, that's all you need. So that's how I've got it right. And I do feel like I'm cheating at times. And I'm not cheating. I'm actually being dramatically more efficient and productive. But it does feel like cheating, particularly, you know, in the summer. It's not unpleasant waking up at, you know, first light at a beautiful lake in the middle of Sussex.
No. I suppose a lot of people can relate to that as well. I mean, the recent pandemic has, I suppose, shifted the way people work. I mean, during that time, Metapack has obviously provided a critical service, really, with your model during the lockdown and the pandemic. I mean, how have you managed that significant increase in demand?
So we've had, it's been crazy. So the levels that we would see between Cyber Monday and Black Friday, or Black Friday and Cyber Monday, we saw sustained for nearly 4 months now. Good news is we did the work. When I joined, I said, look, you've got to get brilliant basics in place, make your company super stable, and then you can do the next stage, which is get a fantastic strategy and go and deliver it. If you don't have stability and you don't have trust with your customers because of that, it's just hard to do. So that paid off. You know, we have elastic scaling. So for us, the increased demand and increased scale just happened. It just worked and happened. We watched it with interest and then carried on doing what we were doing, which is nice because it's not until things are properly stress tested in anger for a long period of time, because we have, you know, the peak period, which is critical. But now what was a intense peak period and a period of worry when I first joined is now just day to day, which is it's been very therapeutic for everybody.
No, has it been a easy transition to everyone working remotely?
Do you know what, Jack? It has for us, because we're digital native. Everybody lives in Zoom and Slack, and we're pretty flexible where people work. We're not tied to the office. We do find that engineering teams tend to want to come together to pair program and, you know, share ideas. So they use the office reasonably. But because of that, it was pretty simple. The frustrating thing is we'd actually just renovated our London offices. And they're really nice, but we haven't been in the finished product, which is really irritating because they're really beautiful. Now they've been empty for 4 months.
Oh, Jesus. I know a few businesses that are in the same position as that. I mean, it's an interesting one, remote working, right? Because, I mean, a lot of people have felt that it is, like, it has actually worked better, like they work more effectively. But, I mean, my own personal experience, I've got a young two-year-old at home, and there was many a Zoom calls where she would want to make an appearance, basically, say hello to everyone and demand her lunch or a biscuit. So it's been quite tough for me, and I'm quite glad that things are slowly returning to normal. So
I think it's interesting, because I think it probably depends on what you do and things. Obviously, in your business, you're talking to customers, and there's a degree of expectation. There's a lot of art. You know, I've really enjoyed getting to know more about my team's families and the people who work with, families and houses. And we are now, we'll quite frequently comment if someone goes into a new part of their house and you see the background, we'll all, you know, let's have a look, you know, which has been really interesting. But I do get the point. I've certainly had a couple of, I've had one non-exec call where both my kids were determined to tell me something, whether they, I liked it or not, which was quite tricky, to say the least.
I think it makes us all a little bit more human as well, right?
It does. And I think that's okay. I think the perfect human doesn't exist, and people have families and lives. I think as long as it's respectful and done in the right way, no one wants to see someone struggling. But equally, you know, we all have lives. I think it's okay. I've learned a lot about pets as well. They seem to be very interested in what's going on, which is quite amazing.
I suppose moving away, what's the biggest area related to your role at the moment that you're, I suppose, most curious about, and why?
Oh, just interested in what we can do in the data space. We're well advanced in it, and we've got the most incredible data team. But the insight that some of our, particularly our carrier team, who are really, really curious about the data, the guy that leads in his team, they're just endlessly, often people with data struggle to find business questions that are meaningful, and they end up doing data for data. They've got a list of brilliant business questions. So it's just seeing that play out. We know the art of the possible. We know we've got these incredible, really interesting things that we can do around how to make deliveries that are better for the planet, that are better for the city, better for the individual, loads and loads of different things, using the liquidity we have in our network of customers and carriers in that ecosystem, we can really genuinely make a significant difference. So it's very, very exciting. If I'm completely honest, it is the reason I joined the business. And now we're really in the heart of it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. No, that sounds really interesting. I mean, one thing that I've always been interested in is war stories, right? So like battle scars that people tell me about, like projects that were going very difficult to begin with, and how they overcome that. I mean, do you have any war stories, like one war story?
Jack, I've got a million working at the Daily Mail Group. That is it's a daily war, because you've got various lots of different newspapers and digital businesses. But the one that sticks out the most was when I was at Fitness First, we wanted to deliver a new sales system. All of our salespeople, about 3,000 people in 550 gyms in 21 countries, all used a paper process, and it was just massively inefficient. Yeah. So we wanted to quickly move to it. So we wanted to build a mini call center, a new sales platform, and then train all of those folks. And to do that, we needed to build our first ever group data center, a group network, and deploy it. And the challenge I had was the prize was massive. We were targeting a very, very lucrative IPO. So I didn't really have time to go and consider who could we work with, how could we do it. So what I did is said to my core team, some amazing, amazing people, right, let's see if we can pull this off together.
Yeah.
So a very small amount of people achieved a huge amount, and it was incredibly long days, and there were days when we were like, hang on, this is in the wrong place, or we're not going to get this ready in time. And we just really worked at solving today's problem, making it happen, solving today's problem, making it happen. And I think we were pretty advanced in some of the ways of working we were doing there. I mean, this was 10, 12 years, 10 maybe more years ago, and we were towards the end of my time there, we were doing daily releases of code. But that moment, there was a lot of weirdly, my head of infrastructure lived in the next street. So there was a fair few kitchen table sessions in the middle of the night, either at my house or his house, to fix things and get things right. And then there was a chap called David Cameron who just, I've never seen someone who could just repeatedly pull something out of the bag in the most incredible way. Just repeat, he'd be like, I'm going to find a way and just go and do it. So it was a very challenging and exciting time, but it was definitely a war story. I learned a lot very quickly, but I also, you know, I definitely lived and breathed nothing else.
Yeah. I think with COVID, I think a few people are going through war stories right now as we speak, right?
So 100%. Yeah.
As we know, there's been a significant economic impact on certain industries.
Yeah.
What is one industry which you feel is primed for digital innovation?
You know what? I would say it's buying a house. It's not estate agency, buying a house, the whole process. I'm doing this at the moment. I'm buying and selling my house, buying another house elsewhere in the country, and just seeing how the whole thing works and how there's chances you can miss the house that's right for you and right for the person to sell to you.
Yeah.
Just because of the busyness of an agent, the briefing they've taken and understood, or how they're remunerated, or how the sellers describe where they're at, or et cetera. There's so many things that could easily be solved, I believe, with some pretty simple things. So finding what's available is sort of solved through Rightmove and things.
Yeah.
But what it cost in the past is sort of solved with the historic pricing. But most of the houses don't ever hit Rightmove. Most good houses never hit it because it's the agent goes, I've got these people. So how do you create better performance out of that? Because it's down to one, you could get a bad agent or a good agent.
Yeah.
How do you make that better? Or the agent is like someone a little more, but actually they're not as good a buyer.
So I think
you could solve that. Sorry, Jack, go on.
I was just going to say, it's a lottery on who you're going to get, just to reiterate.
Yeah, it is. And it's really tough. So I think it's really right for it. And I think the technology is all there. I think it's really about matching. I think it's about using the likes of Zoom, potentially to have a three-way conversation, which is, before we get these people to traipse around your house, why don't you talk about the house and show people around a bit and tell them what you're after?
Yeah.
And all those things. I think there's a lot you could do that would build three-way trust very quickly in the conversation rather than this kind of random matching factor. That'd be my view.
No, nice. I mean, I suppose
it's expensive, right? You're paying on a lot of money for what is, if it's an off-market sale, almost no effort.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a very established fact as well, right, that technology often, I suppose, justifies its own budget. So when there's a big outage or a security breach, I mean, how do you think companies will view internal tech investment in light of what's going on at the moment and the current information?
You know what? I'd say I think there's two cohorts, maybe three. Cohort one is the people who have a great strategy, they're really focused on it, and therefore the cost of technology is the cost of doing it. And I think they're the people this makes not too much difference to. They may, you know, if they have a major issue, they may need to invest in a certain area, but they understand why they're investing clearly and there's a straight line. There's a second cohort, which are the kind of look for no decision if possible, kind of the answer's no, what's the question? And I think they are definitely in that, oh, this is a panic, but maybe it's just temporary. Maybe we can turn off all this video conferencing afterwards and not pay the bill. I would describe them as often penny wise and pound foolish, depending on industry, but generally it's that definitely case. And the third cohort are the people who are probably learning that they need to switch cohorts and doing that. And to me, that's exciting because they're companies that will definitely improve.
You know,
the companies that can make smart decisions for the right reasons generally are the ones that have dynamic competitive advantage and therefore almost always win. They may not win by being the best in the industry or the biggest in the industry, but they win in their way. And that's what it's all about.
No, that sounds, I completely agree. I mean, I know we, I know you mentioned earlier, right, that you would be a techno DJ surfer. I mean, yeah. But has there ever been a time where you've wanted to change industries at all?
Yeah, there is. You know what? I was thinking a couple of years, probably 3 years ago. I'm obsessed with automation and robotics. It will be way more impactful to the world than the internet. I've read a lot about it and really enjoy it. It's a very fascinating subject. And I was considering, how could I pivot into doing that? And I still don't have the answer, and it may be what I do eventually. But it's something that is super interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's as much physical as it is digital, because you have to build, you know, whatever automation has to work. And so I think if you look at the epic rise of self-driving vehicles, it's gone from a kind of fantasy to a reality very, very quickly. Yeah. And I think when you look at the opportunity for automation, it's incredible. It is insane. There's a dark side to it, for sure. But so that would be it, I think. That's a kind of, I guess, a challenge that's very unsolved and very difficult. And it has some really difficult, interesting problems to solve.
Yeah. I suppose just kind of closing this off, I mean, who do you think is the best in the world at what you do? So I know it's a very difficult question to answer, but I mean,
I'm not very good. I'm not very in the kind of CIO, CTO community within the UK, for example.
Yeah.
It's not a world I inhabit. I spend my time focused on all the other obsessions that I have, but also very much my job. So I couldn't give you a list of the top five CTOs in the UK. I wouldn't know who they are. I can tell you there's people I have massive amount of respect for. If I had to pick one, it would be John Collison, who founded Stripe with his brother. Yeah. Their company is just the blueprint for how to build a digital business. You know, the APIs are beautifully documented. Everything works. It's very simple to do. You can access it without talking to a salesperson. You can get on, but they're a bank, effectively, a very large one. And I spent some time with him, and just talking to him about how he sees the world, it's just so clean and simple. And I think he's under-recognized as how smart what he's done is, because he's not created a monster. He's created the same kind of outlook. Now, I don't know what happens internally, but the same outlook as a company to those using it and working with it, that it's just beautiful and simple. And I really admire that, because there's a no compromise attitude in that.
Yeah. I think what I see when I speak to a lot of people as well, right, is like from developers, engineers, all the way up to kind of heads of infrastructure. I mean, a lot of people aspire to be a CTO, I suppose. Mm. That's the end goal for a lot of people. I mean, you're a CTO now. So what's next for you?
You know what? It's an interesting question. It's one that I discussed with my wife about a year ago. A few people have said I should do CEO jobs because I talk more about strategy and markets, etc. But I love what I do. I love technology.
Yeah.
So for me, what's next is to find, hopefully not for a long time, because I absolutely love working at Metapack. We have the most amazing owners. But finding a new challenge that really excites me. That's what's next. And eventually, not working as much and spending more time, you know, surfing, not catching fish and making rubbish music badly. But they're the things that I think will balance out eventually. But I think it's all about the challenge, and something I find exciting and interesting and difficult is what I get really, really motivated by. A standard kind of come in, run a gazillion pound budget with a gazillion employees, it's just of zero interest to me.
Yeah.
You can't affect it in the way that you can when you know everyone's name and you can, you know, dramatically change the culture. And it's very exciting doing that.
Do you think you'll ever dip your toe in the NED world? So non-exec director.
I do now. I advise the Gambling Commission on Digital with a really good team of folks. And it's really interesting. It's effectively, how does a regulator in what has been an analog regulator keep up with a very fast accelerating digital industry? And the reason I joined is to protect problem gamblers. It's a challenge and it's tough and it's complex for all. It's complex for the regulator, it's complex for the operators. The government needs to understand how it works. So it's a complex problem that is very enjoyable and it has a real social purpose.
Yeah, social purpose. I was just about to say that.
Which is very enjoyable. Every time I go into the conversations, I fill my brain and get it's such a big thing to process, and then walk away and then think about it for like a week. It's fun. I really enjoy it. So I don't necessarily look to collect a bunch of non-exec things here and there, but I do some work that isn't. I haven't got a title for it, and I don't get paid for it. Just helping companies and individuals and startups that I think really have got a great story, and just trying to help if I can in a useful way. I don't need anything from it apart from, I just think great people should get all the help they should, you know, that they can, no matter where it comes from.
Nice. Well, listen, Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and thanks for giving us your story and your thoughts. I really appreciate it, and we wish you all the best.
Magic. Cheers, Jack.
But for all our viewers, please keep an eye out for episode 2 of the mini series, and we'll see you all next time. All the best.